All right, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order on February 18th. It is 3 p.m. on my clock, so I will call Faculty Senate to order. Joan, can I verify that we have a quorum?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Awesome. So first up is an adoption of the agenda for today's meeting. If I could entertain a motion to approve, Felicia is a first, Atkins second. All in favor of adopting the agenda for today's meeting, please say aye. Opposed? All right. Agenda is adopted. Next up is the approval of the January 21st, 2026 minutes. If I could have a motion to approve the minutes. It's quick this time. All right. We'll give to Nowak and then to Wedby for a first and a second. Any edits, corrections, changes? All right, seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from the January 21st meeting, please say aye. Opposed? Abstentions? All right, minutes are approved. Joan, do we have any public comment?
No public comment.
All right, no public comment. That brings us up to the Faculty Senate President's announcements. I'm going to keep them brief today. I say that every time. Today, I actually hopefully will. First is you will probably see emails and recruitment efforts for committees of the university. This recruitment has started, so do please consider signing up to serve on a committee if somebody taps you on the shoulder, or consider tapping others on the shoulder for committees you think they'd be good for. That is how we live out the shared governance principles and values at our institution. So please do consider thinking about who could serve in that place, or if you would be a good voice or perspective in those various committees. Second up is I've been working with the interim vice provost for faculty affairs, as well as the former vice provost for faculty affairs and others across campus, to develop a web-based repository for the academic unit and college personnel procedures and policies, as well as the workload policies. This will provide an online accessible set of or access point to our policies, so that folks can find theirs easily and also can learn about how to improve their documents over time. So that will be posted soon online. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to ask. And this will help us as we work to continue the continuous improvement cycles of our promotion and tenure and our workload policies on campus. Up next, I've got just recently, I guess today, there was a communication that went out about from the Digital Accessibility Steering Committee that came and talked to us last session. And this is just a reminder to work towards making your course materials accessible. And there are resources available from CITL. And this is an opportunity to continue to improve your teaching materials as you go forward. So please look for that announcement. I'll follow up with those resources as well. And those are my announcements for today. Then that rolls into the provost's announcements. So I will invite up our provost, Elish Piper, to provide announcements.
Thanks. Good afternoon. You may have heard the governor gave his budget address today, and I'm just going to share a couple of key points. That was at noon today. And so he's pointing to a 1% increase for higher education, which would be a positive for us. That would be a little over $1 million. We know that normally the budget address indicates what the governor wants to do, but of course, it still has to go through their governance process to finalize the budget. He also indicated that there are plans to continue funding MAP and AIM at their current levels. So that's encouraging because those benefit a lot of our students. In addition, he has stated that the plan is to set aside $300 million of new funding to cover deferred maintenance on university campuses. We know that we have a significant amount of deferred maintenance on our campus. We've heard before that that was the plan and the money wasn't fully released, and so we didn't get to see the full benefit of that. So hopefully this time around, more of that funding will actually be made available to campuses so that we can address some of the deferred maintenance needs that we have here. You should have received information about the campus climate survey. It is open until March 6th. We want to encourage everyone, faculty, staff, and students, to complete that, because that information is very helpful in terms of identifying where there are challenges, where there are opportunities, what things need to be addressed. Thus far, I'm told we're getting a good response rate from employees, but not a very good response rate from students. So if you're teaching classes and have the opportunity to encourage encourage students to complete that survey, that would be greatly appreciated, because the more input we have, the more we can do with that input. And again, it's open until March 6th. In addition to that, sorry, I have two pages here. I want to remind you that April 1st is the deadline for textbook adoptions for both the summer and the fall. I know that seems really, really far away, but it is important for us to be able to adopt those materials in advance so that we can make sure that the bookstore has them available, and students who use financial aid or student athletes who have support for their texts have the opportunity to use that. You can adopt your text through Blackboard under the tool section. And I believe there is going to be a training session on March 26th. Chairs received information about that team's training session. So if you're not sure how to adopt books, or others in your unit, or maybe newer instructors or graduate teaching assistants aren't sure how to do that, they're encouraged to attend that as well. We are currently still accepting applications for a faculty member to serve as the Provost Fellow for Undergraduate Affairs. Those applications are still open through February 27th. It was announced in the Provost Post. So if you or someone you know is interested in that opportunity to get involved in that leadership development experience, focused specifically on undergraduate education, we would look forward to receiving applications. If you have questions, Alicia Shadaman, our Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, is the one who's coordinating that. Also want to let you know that the Division of Research and Innovation Partnerships is going to start holding a series of meetings to talk about research infrastructure needs. They want to make sure that they get information from across campus, so they're going to be scheduling those around broad fields of study, for example, the humanities, the arts, education, STEM, social and behavioral, social sciences, behavioral and health sciences, and community engagement and outreach. Details will be coming out via email and also the RIPS newsletter. So please make sure that you share that and that you participate in that, because again, the more input, the better RIPS and the rest of campus will be situated to address those research infrastructure needs. In addition to that, I want to let you know that something is going to be coming out from the Division of International Affairs through a generous donation. We're going to be able to offer a small set of grants to support internationalization. And these would be applications are welcomed from faculty, staff, and students, and they can fund things like hosting an international visitor, offering an international event, even travel to an international destination. And so those parameters for applying for that will be coming out shortly, and those will be shared through email and also through announcements. So if you work in international spaces or have international-based projects or initiatives, this could be an opportunity to leverage some of that generous donor funding to support your work. And I believe that that is all of my announcements. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. And that brings us up to our only item for faculty consideration, and that is a presentation, Centering Engagement, Driving Impact, Community Engagement at NIU. And Rena is up here, and I'll let her introduce herself and take it away. Great. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ben. Hi, everyone. I'm Rena Kachonis. I have the privilege of serving as Vice President for Outreach, Engagement, and Regional Development here at NIU. And we're going to take just a few minutes to talk to you about Centering Engagement and Driving Impact. This is the action plan that we've been working on with many of your colleagues and staff and students and community members over the past 5-6 years to really institutionalize community engagement, support your efforts and your aspirations for community engaged scholarship, community engaged teaching and learning, and community facing service activities. So let's see. There we go. Hopefully you have seen, if you didn't hear it during the State of the University address, President Freeman announced that the university has won reclassification as a Carnegie Engaged Institution. So we are one of less than 300 institutions in the United States who have qualified, meaning that we have achieved a level of excellence in community engagement in terms of infrastructure, interest by faculty, outcomes, impact, student engagement, and really demonstrates the commitment to community engagement as part of the mission of the university, and that we have resourced it and that we are supporting community engagement. So this is something that year-long study was undertaken with a number of faculty. In fact, many of you in the room probably were called on. One of the challenges that we had this year was not, gee, what do we put in this report to demonstrate our excellence, but rather, we could only have a certain number of pages and characters that we can use. So which ones do we choose? Which is a great problem to have. So the Division of Outreach Engagement and Regional Development is in place to provide leadership, partnership, and support to you and your colleagues, staff, community members, and students. And what we mean by that is developing an infrastructure, providing professional development, providing direct consultation. And you're going to hear from a couple of our staff members today who will tell you a little bit more about what they do and how they can help support your work. We are guided in many ways by the efforts of the Engagement Roundtable. And I'm delighted to say that the Engagement Roundtable is co-chaired by me and our Executive Vice President and Provost. So it was very important to both of us to say Academic Affairs and Outreach Engagement and Regional Development are working on this together to demonstrate the alignment of our missions and the importance of public engagement and the impact that we can do. Some of you in the room may have been on our University Outreach Advisory Committee. That is a group that selects the Presidential Engagement and Partnerships professors. In fact, I think that's coming up this Monday. We're going to be selecting one or two people for that award. So that's very important. And I want to flip back to Engagement Roundtable for a moment. I mentioned that Provost Elish Piper and I co-chair. There are a couple of people in the room who are on that Engagement Roundtable, and that's Ben Creed and Laura Ruth Johnson, who's in the back of the room. And I don't think there are any others that I've seen other than members of the OERD team. So it's very important to us that we have that group that really says, all right, let's take a look at the vision. Let's take a look at the institutional goals, the entire mission, and make sure that what we're doing is aligned. And it's aligned not only with institutional mission and goals, but with what all of you are wanting to do with your scholarship and your teaching. And again, you're going to hear a little bit more in a moment from two of our team members. We are in the second three-year action plan on centering engagement and driving impact. And you notice that I'm saying centering engagement. We want to make sure that we have the infrastructure and the supports to center community engagement at NIU because it's such an important part of our mission, but we are not centralizing impact or engagement. Engagement happens all across the institution, and that is how it should be. What we are in place to do is to support the work that you are doing, is to be a partner to you, and provide leadership in terms of vision, infrastructure development, data management, and those kinds of things. And it's very important to just continue to make the point about institutional collaboration. Community engagement happens in many different ways across divisions, across colleges, and we're in place, the Engagement Roundtable is in place, to learn what it is that you're doing, identify ways that we can support the work that you are doing, and provide professional development to help all of us aspire to kind of the next level and to help us all get there. So I would now like to turn to my colleagues within OERD. I'm very pleased to let you know that in the last couple of years, some longtime excellent staff members have been promoted into new roles that are more specifically focused on the type of centering engagement, driving impact work that we want to do. The first person that you will hear from is Janine East. She is a director of Community Engaged Impact. And then you will hear from Jennifer Gross, who is a director of Community Engaged Partnerships. Janine.
Okay, that should do it. Okay, great. All right, that's better. Thank you. This one. All right, thank you so much for having us here today. I'm really excited to tell you about the work that we've been doing. I'm going to have a very, very high level overview today because we only have a few minutes to talk. So if there's anything that I'm discussing with you that you're interested in, please feel free to go to our website to learn more or email me directly. You can email me at oerd@niu.edu. So Three things I'm going to talk about. One is measuring community engagement impact. The other is supporting the community engagement work that you all are doing and that our staff members are doing across campus. And then the third is elevating that work. So measuring community engagement impact. I've been doing a lot of research over the last few years, and I'm learning that measuring impact is a very important piece of community engagement across institutions all over the United States, but we're all still trying to figure out exactly how to do it. The good news is that there are many different frameworks that we can choose from to measure engagement, both from research, from teaching and learning. We can measure our partnerships and the engagement that way. A lot of times we're pulling in data that might just show outputs or outcomes, and we are working on ways to measure things over time to really elevate and show the effect and the positive work that we're doing here on campus. The industry frameworks, I have several of them. I have a whole presentation about that, and I'm happy to share those with you. I'm going to a couple of trainings in the next couple of weeks where I'm going to learn even more, so they may be relevant as well. Let's see, we are talking, right now, along with Jennifer, my colleague, we are working with Academic Affairs to assess the partnerships of the community engaged designated courses. So that's great because it allows us to get feedback from the partners about the projects, about the work that the students are doing and the faculty members are doing, so that we can have continuous improvement, so we can work on how to do this better, both as the program that we're putting together and the courses themselves. All right, next slide. Okay, how are we supporting community-engaged work? Oh, there's so many ways. One is the community-engaged toolkit, and this is it's on our website. There are several different toolkits. We have one for students, one for staff and faculty. That's in partnership with CITL. We have LibGuides in partnership with the university libraries, which have books and resources all about effective community engagement practices. And then this spring, I will be adding in a community engagement impact toolkit as well. So peruse those if you have a favorite resource that is not on that list. I'd be happy to add it as well. We also have professional development workshops. We have a brown bag lunch tomorrow at noon online that Alicia Shadiman will be giving about how to build your community engaged course. And we usually have about three different brown bag lunches throughout the academic year. We also have an excellent workshop, and I wanted to really bring this out because it is a recording, the slides and video of Diane Dobernak from Michigan State University, and she came here last spring and taught us how to get our community engaged work published. That's amazing. It's also broken down into really manageable chunks of information, so it's not a heavy lift if you have a little bit of time to check it out. Also, I wanted to mention that NIU does have university-wide memberships in Campus Compact, as well as the Engagement Scholarship Consortium, and they have lots of resources, also webinars about community engagement and community engagement impact. Okay, and finally, elevating community engagement. So we have some amazing resources in OERD to showcase the work that you here are doing in community engagement. We have an outstanding writer, Beth Shuey. She is amazing. And she is writing NIU Today stories, blog posts, press releases that do get picked up in the news about community engaged work that we are doing both in our division and across the university. And she makes it so easy to tell your story because she will call you up and interview you and do the heavy lifting of writing. So please take advantage of that. She'll also work with your college communicators because we know you also have communicators in each of your colleges, and she can work with them as well. What else do we have? I talked about the brown bag lectures. We've got our partnership map. Can you advance the slide? Thank you. So we have this amazing interactive partnership map, and I really need to get the word out about this. So this is accessible from our website at OERD, and you can submit your partnership, and Right now we have about, 211 partnerships, but we know there are many more. We are collecting the information so that we can help connect people, and Jennifer can help connect people when they're looking for new partners, and connect faculty members too who might be doing similar work. So check that out. Let me know if you have questions. Again, I can be reached at oerd@niu.edu. And I'm going to pass this on to Jen.
Hi, I'm Jen Gross. I'm the Director of Community Engage Partnerships. Or maybe I can just be seen to you all as a helper, a connector for all of you with your community partners. So one of the things, in addition to all the great resources that my colleague Janine has shared with you, this slide just gives you a brief snapshot of the ways that we can help you or celebrate or continue to enhance the work that you are doing in community engagement. So whether it's thinking through those initial partnerships, how may I do this? How might I want to enhance it more? We are happy to help do that or learn about how you are doing so we can advance that work. Making connections to real community partners, whether that's in your research work, whether it's a community engaged course, whether it's major grant funding. We work regularly with faculty members who are from the beginning of that process to think about, where might I want to work with? Who can I work with? Here's who I have worked with, and helping to make those real tangible connections with your community partners. And in that tactical partnerships, whether that is thinking through the methodology in your community engaged course delivery, whether it's thinking through the grant partnerships and deliverables, whether it's looking at community engaged projects that you are looking to do, how can we help you think through those? What are best practices in that? And who are real partners that you can work with right here in our hyperlocal community? And then development of those partnerships, thinking through mutual benefit and working within that. And then campus access. We hear a lot about some of these small little things that can just help make all the difference. Maybe you've got resources to fund a community partner in your project, or you don't, but they want to present at your class, or you want to have a meeting with them. Some of the resources that we have in OERD include providing parking or access to campus so that your partner doesn't have to feel like this is a hard place to get to, that we can help getting them on campus and to you or to your students is very much possible. We, as my colleague Janine said, we provide assessment of community engaged partnerships through our community engaged courses, and we have a process that we work and do that through, and we're happy to share those processes with you, whether that's you want to do that on your own because you're not necessarily in a community engaged designated course yet, or you want to add that as a community of practice in work that you're doing. And as Janine really went through well, how do we celebrate the impact that you're making? And I know we're short on time, but if I can take a moment to just give a brief example of how we've been seeing this happen in real time. Carol Walther and the work she has been doing for many years within court services and juvenile justice with Jack King and so many others. We took Beth Shuey, our writer, and we went to the court services office. We sat with their entire team and with Carol, and we got to listen and hear, record, and then write several articles. Journal articles are coming out, and as a result of that, as well as press releases and NIU Today articles, that work is actually even funding or going in as background for grant work that they are doing. So these are just some of the tactical ways that we can help advance your community engaged partnerships. Next slide. So we'll move quickly. You can go ahead to the next one. As we've noted, I'm working really closely with our friends in academic affairs and the designation of community engaged courses. I can see several of you here who we are already working on that front with. But that is an important component. I think we're now at 36 courses are designated as community engaged. And we have a community of practice that's working in within that. I see Emily and others in the room that we are learning from and with, and Laura Ruth Johnson, and several others of you who have been a part of that groundbreaking work that we're doing here. And we're very excited to see where this is going for our students and for our faculty, because we know that in community engaged designated courses, not only does this help our students to change the world, but it helps their career placement and where they are going. And it also advances the scholarship that you all have worked so hard and that you're contributing to. And it solves real world problems for our community partners. So we greatly appreciate the work that you're doing there. Last but not least, we have Community Engagement Week coming up April 13th through the 17th. Laura Ruth Johnson and Ben Creed and others here with us in the room are helping to shape that week for us. So I just want to draw attention to two days of this. Next slide. This will be, we're doing 2 days of this symposium. Laura's like, there's my face right up there on it. She's loving this. We're putting a call out for a couple of our folks that were really highlighting the exemplars in community engaged scholarship delivery. This is just a snippet of some of the kinds of sessions that you're going to see. So Laura will help do a keynote session for us on looking at communities as an intellectual space. This entire week is about celebrating the work we're doing here on our campus and the exemplars in you as our faculty in community engagement and the community partners that we have within this work. Eric Yunko and his team will have representatives here from the University of Tatova talking about that global lens of community engagement. And then Ben and others will present on promotion and tenure within community engagement. That's just a little snippet on what that week will look like. And as we encourage you to attend and be part of this, as well as a community of practice that we are building around community engagement. So if I summarize this, we greatly appreciate the work that you are doing and the scholarship that you all have, and we look to learn from and with you, as well as our community partners in community engagement. So we hope that we can be a resource for you all so that we can celebrate and advance that work. And you can reach me through Janine, through Rena. Ben knows how to find us all, but I hope to be that easy button to help advance the work that you are doing with your community partners and in community engagement. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all for coming and presenting. Are there any questions or comments from the Faculty Senate? One of the reasons, besides my own personal involvement in this work, that I wanted to invite OERD here for campus to learn is it's not just for those in this room, but it's for those academic units you all represent. One of the things that I did last academic year was talk with a number of our newest NIU faculty, and a theme that emerged out of that was that they see themselves as either community engaged scholars and practitioners already, or as community engaged curious. They were seeing the public impact, the impact into communities, as the reason for the work that they do, whether that is in the natural sciences and the humanities or in other spaces across campus. And so I would hope and ask you all to share this information with your newest faculty members, as well as all faculty members in your units, because this is something that a lot of folks who are coming up into the professorate are currently thinking about and grounding their work in, is how does it make real world impacts directly in communities and in location. So I hope that this information is a resource to everybody here and is also helping serve that, what I heard is an ask out of our newest NIU faculty, which is how do we support, how do we get resources to do community engaged work that is meaningful to the individual faculty member as well as to institution and to community. So thank you all for coming and joining us today. And if you have any questions, do please feel free to engage with them or reach out to myself or Laura or others that are involved. So thank you so much. All right. That takes us, we have two items of unfinished business. The first up is the Bob Lane Faculty Advocacy Award. You'll see what that is about on page 8. During this meeting, you'll see that we do have a nomination, and so we will take a vote on that nomination to approve it. So I did not see David here today. I forgot to invite him as the letter writer of this nomination, so I will do it on his behalf. But as David Ballantyner is not here today, I'd like to recognize and support Beth McGowan, her nomination for the Bob Lane Faculty Advocacy Award. I encourage you all to read through the nomination letter that David Ballantyner pulled together, as it covers many, but not all, of the different ways that Beth has been engaged in faculty advocacy, and outlines some of the reasons that she is well deserving of this award and recognition. I've had the privilege of seeing Beth in several roles and activities that are listed in David's letter. And she always has come prepared, ready to share a perspective and push others to grow. And also importantly, she's willing to listen and learn herself to be a better advocate for faculty and for community, for campus, for students, for staff. And I think that's just truly impressive. With that, I would like to ask for a motion to approve and to consider Beth McGowan as the recipient for the Bob Lane Faculty. I'm sorry, there's a number of folks that want to do it. So we can give it Mark Van Weeden. Is it all right if I give it to Karen? Is that all right? All right, Taylor. So first, Mark, second, Karen, as a nomination of Beth in this receiving this award. I would welcome, if anybody wanted to say anything, they're welcome to before we take the vote. Beth, I think, just said, no, that's okay. Is that right? She's asking nobody to stand up, Mark. Sit back down, Mark. All right. But yes, I would like to then call this to a vote. And we'll do it by acclamation. So all in favor of Beth McGowan earning the Bob Lane Faculty Advocacy Award, please indicate by saying aye. Aye. And with that, I would like to ask everybody to congratulate Beth with a round of applause for earning this. Thank you very much, Beth. We will, at the next Faculty Senate meeting, we will have a certificate and we'll get her name engraved on a plaque that hangs in the office of the Faculty Senate. If anybody wants to see her name on there eventually, welcome, stop by and say hi to me and actually look at the plaque. It's great that it's there. And yeah, that will be at our next Faculty Senate meeting. So we'll embarrass you one more time, Beth. All right. That takes us to our second item under this, under unfinished business, and that is the proposed amendment to the Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 14. You will see the same draft as we had before on pages 11 to 14. There was no real comments or concerns or edits to the actual text that was there. However, we, for this process to go forward, we will do a motion, a second, open it up for conversation, and then we will call it to a vote in alignment with our bylaws and how we update our bylaws. So before we have any discussion about this, I will ask for a motion to approve the proposed amendment to Article 14. Thank you. Got a first and a second. Sorry, Karen, you've got enough. We'll give it to Dennis. All right, a second to Dennis. Any discussion or conversation before we call this to vote? Again, nothing has changed since our first read. And in the meantime, I have not heard any other feedback. So I believe appropriate wait time has been given. And with that, I will call it the call of the motion to vote, the question to vote. And I will turn it over to Joan to lead us through that process. And if you have not, while we're bringing that up, if you have not yet grabbed a clicker and you are a voting member, please do grab that. Or if you are here as an alternate for somebody who is a voting member, please grab a clicker out of the box in the back. Thank you.
So you just took my line, Ben. Yeah, so the first thing we want to do is just make sure that we have enough voting members. So if your name is on this slide or you're here for a voting member, you should have a clicker in the room. So looks like we're all set with that. So to become effective, the amendment must be approved by a vote of 2/3 of those voting, provided at least 2/3 of the voting members are present. So the first thing that we're going to do is make sure that we have 2/3 of voting members present in the room. So I'm going to open the poll. And I'm going to ask everybody to click 1 or A on your clicker, and hopefully we'll get a number up to 44, which is 2/3. One more.
Somebody was messing with us. Yeah.
All right. That's good. Okay. So now we're going to actually vote on the proposal. Let me close this. There we go. Okay. So on your clickers, if you click one or A, you agree with the motion to approve the proposal. Two or B is no, you don't agree. And three or C is to abstain. And that means that you're telling us that you're present, but you're choosing not to vote. So if you click three, it'll have no impact on the outcome of the vote. So the poll's open. It looks good. Yeah. So let's see. So the total is 39 A, 1 no, and 6 abstain.
So that means the motion passes. So thank you. I should have said this during the discussion, but thank you to those who spent a lot of time and effort working on this. It's really appreciated. Todd, James, Emily, and Dennis, I know you took a lot of leadership in that, as well as the group of the Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee. So thank you for that care you took in updating an important part of our bylaws. So really appreciate that. All right, that is great. So now we're going to roll forward into new business. You will see on pages 15 to 16, a resolution in support of equitable public university funding formula. To help walk us through this item, I'd like to call up Mark Van Wienen, who's faculty senator, as well as the president of the United Faculty Alliance, and Jason Axt, who is a faculty senator and the president of UPI's non-tenure chapter instructors union. As they come up and we pull the slides up, I just wanted to give an overview of the process, how we're approaching this resolution, so that folks know what to expect. So first, these two will, Mark and Jason, will share a brief informational presentation. Then we will have, then they will read into the record the resolution as we will take, or as we will consider it. After they read through the resolution, I will call for a motion and a second to bring the resolution as read to the floor. And then we will have a time for that discussion and then a final vote, just so you know that process as we go through with it. And with that, I will turn it over to Jason and Mark.
Thank you, Ben. So good afternoon. Point of reality check. This is just not an NIU centric thing. This initiative is happening in various forms at eight universities across Illinois. I'm the clicker. There we go. So what you already know, we're underfunded chronically, and universities are funded inequitably. Not everybody gets the same funding formula. Average tuition at Illinois universities has outstripped the national average, which has had two very negative effects for us, not only at NIU, but also elsewhere in the state. One of them, it has created a more pronounced outflow of students seeking higher education in other states, other schools, or perhaps worse yet, has killed the initiative to pursue higher ed altogether. So what we're trying to do, both chapters of your faculty union here, is we're trying to create a resolution that, before I'm getting ahead of myself, another troubling data point is that the average graduation student debt in Illinois is approaching $30,000, which is a very very serious chunk of change. What we're trying to do is pressure, perhaps not the right word, the Illinois Board of Higher Education funding formula as developed by the Illinois Commission on Equitable Public University Funding. There is an identified need for an additional $1.4 billion of state funding to support the full cost of equity-centered funding. 10 of 12 universities in the state are funded at less than 75% of that targeted level. And of those, 8, including us, are funded at less than 60%. So I'm not going to go through every data point in the interest of preserving your time. But what we're trying to do is, come to a resolution that encourages or pressures the Illinois Board of Higher Education to begin to devote more serious effort into rectifying this. Ben, are you ready to step up?
So anybody who knows me knows how technologically challenged I am across the full range of technological devices. So I'm going to pass the clicker back to Jason so that he can click through for me. All right. I'm also going to find the microphone. So as Jason has mentioned, this is an initiative that incorporates the work that is happening on a variety of campuses across Illinois. It's coordinated through the chapters of the UPI, the University Professionals of Illinois. This includes then faculty at Eastern, Western, Illinois State, Governor State, Chicago State, NIU, the University of Illinois at Springfield. And I think that's the full set. And this is a quiz that we have to pass when we become presidents of unions. And I'm not sure I got 100%, but I'm close. All right. I wanted to just touch on a few points here as we talk about what exactly we're asking of you today. We're asking of you that you'll support a resolution that will call upon the Illinois Board of Higher Education to support the adequate and equitable funding formula. So this has been an ongoing effort now for the last year and more. In the spring of 2025, we carried out direct lobbying of legislators. This was a campaign that we did in conjunction with the president's office and in collaboration with the NIU lobbyist down in Springfield. We continued this fall. Some of you may have signed small cards that were delivered to the Illinois Board of Higher Education in November of 2024. There were over 1,400 from the various chapters of campuses affiliated with the University Professionals of Illinois. There were over 400 from NIU. Then yesterday we delivered Valentines to Governor Pritzker. And yes, we know that they were late coming yesterday, but he's been late and slow on funding higher education. Over 423 signed cards from NIU. And so we were a big part of that pressure campaign yesterday, but we know we need more. And so this is this coordinated campaign. It's taking place through 8 different campuses and the labor unions that are representing faculty at these campuses. We want to pressure the IBHE and the state and Governor Pritzker to do much better than 1%. We want him to release the 2% of the 3% that was approved last May. We want the IBHE to support the Adequate and Equitable Public University Funding Act, as it was named last spring when it was introduced in Springfield. We're asking NIU faculty to urge other faculty and students and families and concerned communities for better funding of higher education. And we particularly want to focus on the equitable public university funding formula, which was a report that was legislatively commissioned, which reported to the IBHE. We're not just making up this funding formula thing. This was a report given to the IBHE, which the IBHE has not acted upon. So where are we? We've got a resolution. We have shared that with you in advance. We've gone through the process of bringing it to the steering committee. The steering committee has passed it unanimously. It's also been a resolution that has been approved unanimously by the executive boards of both the instructors union, represented by Jason, and by the UFA, represented by myself today. This means that these executive committees then represent over 500 NIU faculty members. If this resolution that we have offered is approved, it would next go to the IBHE meeting that's taking place in Edwardsville at SIU there on March 18th. This will be presented in person by representatives of the local. And as I've intimated, I think the similar resolutions are going to be coming from every campus at which there are faculty represented in the UPI. I'm going to just make two further points about next steps. One next step is that we had a conversation with Tiffany Puckett, our faculty representative from NIU, who is, I think, in the House. Tiffany suggested a further whereas in our resolution. And so I thought this was going to be called the Puckett Amendment, but I realized later that we don't actually need to introduce it as an amendment since it hasn't been formally introduced until we read it. And so I'm calling it the Puckett Provision, because Tiffany Puckett provided the data and the key points there. All right. Finally, April 16th, and I realize that this conflicts with the community engagement week, but I just want to suggest that, to me, one ultimate form of community engagement in a way that you could spend April 16th would be to join the Teach Out down in Springfield. Buses are going to be provided by UPI 4100, and we hope that you will consider in joining us. And that is what I have to say as my piece, and I will open the floor up for whatever the next steps are.
All right. So the next steps, as I said, what we'll do is we'll have a reading of the resolution, including the Puckett provision, so that everybody has that going forward. That is the one addition. It's an additional whereas from what was provided to you ahead of time in the packet. So you can read along in your packet. I believe Joan is bringing it up on screen as well. But that's the additional whereas. So we're having them formally read it. And so it's in the record. And then we will take a motion in a second to consider it. And that's where we'll have discussion related to the vote.
Good. So I'll go through this in the interest of time as quickly as possible, because all of you can have already seen much of this material. Beginning at the top, whereas from 2000 to 2020, Illinois state investment in colleges and universities dropped by 46% in inflation-adjusted dollars. And whereas Illinois public universities from 2015 to 2023 experienced an average 22% cut in inflation adjustment funding, and whereas the Illinois Board of Higher Education, IBHE, funding formula as developed by the Illinois Commission on Equitable Public University Funding, hereafter Equitable Public University Funding Formula, identifies the need for $1.4 billion in additional state funding to universities to support the full cost of equity-centered adequacy, and whereas 10 of the 12 Illinois public universities are funded at less than 75% of the IBHE-identified adequacy level, with 8 universities, parenthetically, Eastern Illinois University, Governor State University, Illinois State University, Northeastern Illinois University, Northern Illinois University, Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, University of Illinois of Chicago, and Western Illinois University, funded at less than 65%, And whereas from FY 2004 to FY 2024, the average tuition at Illinois State Universities increased by 199%, while the national average increased by 108%, a discrepancy that has led increasing numbers of Illinois students to attend out-of-state colleges and universities, or deterred them from pursuing higher education altogether. And whereas the student share of Illinois college education costs from tuition and fees has increased from 25.4% in FY 2004 to 64.4% in FY 22. And whereas the average graduating student debt in Illinois is now approaching $30,000, and whereas the increasing cost of tuition and fees has contributed to a drop in statewide enrollment, threatening the viability of programs and the quality of education at our institution, and whereas Northern Illinois University, NIU, and other regional universities in Illinois serve a large percentage of students with high financial need, including many first-generation students and minority students who are underrepresented in higher education. The students for whom higher education provides a powerful level for social advancement, and hence with whom publicly funded higher education finds its noblest mission. And whereas chronic underfunding of NIU and other state institutions has impacted all of our students negatively, denying students the resources they need to stay in school and work to graduate. And whereas in fall 2025, enrollment at Illinois public universities increased by 3.8%. in the undergraduate population and increased 6.8% in the full-time first-year freshman enrollment, and Illinois public universities can reasonably anticipate additional enrollment growth as a result of the Illinois One-Click College Admit Program, which admits students to Illinois public universities based solely on grade point average, and students admitted through the One-Click Admit will likely seek financial aid, scholarships, and other funding to enroll and persist, thereby still further increasing demand for student funding resources across Illinois public universities. And whereas in its January meeting, the IBHE only recommended a 3% budget increase for FY 2027, a recommendation that addresses neither the shortfall created by the mere 1% approved and released by the governor for Illinois universities in FY 2026, nor the structural inequities between Illinois universities. And whereas the IBHE has recommended only a $50 million increase in monetary award or MAP funding, despite the state's failure to meet the outcomes of the IBHE strategic plan for the last 2 years. And whereas the IBHE has not approved a motion to support the equitable public university funding formula. I'll turn this over to Mark.
Be it resolved that the Faculty Senate of Northern Illinois University, representing faculty, students, administrators, staff, and other employees of the university, calls upon the IBHE to support increased state funding for higher education, including release of the remainder of the legislatively approved FY 2026 budgetary increases of 3% for Illinois universities, of which 2% has been withheld by the governor of Illinois, and be it further resolved that the NIU Faculty Senate calls upon the IBHE to support the passage of legislation implementing the equitable public university funding formula, most recently introduced in the Illinois legislature as the Adequate and Equitable Higher Education Funding Act, that provides increased resources to institutions distributed according to the financial needs of institutions and their students. And be it further resolved that the NIU Faculty Senate urges students, their families, and concerned communities across Illinois to support increased public funding for higher education in Illinois, particularly through legislation implementing the equitable public university funding formula. And be it finally resolved that the NIU faculty finds, if the IBHE fails to call for the passage of legislation funding Illinois universities adequately equitably and sustainably consistent with the equitable public university funding formula that it will have failed in its charge to advance the interests of Illinois students and their families. And so I move. Calling for a second.
I can give it to Alicia Finch as a second. And I would then ask for any discussion, comments, or any other input folks might have before we would to call it to the resolution to a vote.
Thank you, guys. This is James Burton from the Department of Management at College of Business. Thank you for bringing this forward. I'm in support of this. I do have a question about the new provision that it was added. And when it was read, it made me start thinking that are we being inconsistent in our arguments that we're losing students to other states, other students are not going to college at all. But then we go on later to say, oh, but we're having an increase in enrollment. I just wonder if that's a problem.
I'll address that as well as I can. To me, we're talking about a historic shortfall in the funding of higher education. And so that's the backward looking aspect of the resolution and the content therein, right? The forward looking aspect of it is that, all right, we've lost students and now we're attracting them back and we're not increasing the amount of funding in order to actually help them do what they need to do in order to graduate. So to me, it's partly a matter of the historic record versus the helpful, I think, data that Professor Puckett brought to our attention, and that those increases in students, which we absolutely welcome, also present additional challenges if we're not getting more money.
Thank you for bringing this up. I think this is a pretty good document. Evgeny Nestor from chemistry. My suggestion is that there was that extra stuff added to it, which we did not see in the document, which we have, neither it was shown on the screen. So I'm wondering, how can we vote for a document which we did not see in its entirety, or we don't have in its entirety? So I would suggest to table it until the next meeting when we will get the complete version of the document so we could vote for it rather than voting for something which does not even exist as a document yet.
I would be happy to travel over to my laptop and do what I thought I had done earlier when I shared this document with the Faculty Senate office so that it can be seen in print. My view of that addition was that it was entirely consistent with the spirit and the data of the document as it went through the steering committee. And if it would be the preference that the Tiffany Puckett provision is not considered, that it could be left out, and we could talk about this document, which you have been able to review in detail. But again, I'd be happy to walk over to my laptop and send it over so that we can see it in print.
I mean, it may be not possible for everyone at this point because not everyone has a laptop, but I think generally we should vote for something which we see in its entirety as a document, not just some pieces added later when after we have voted. And my second concern is that last statement about that the IBHE, if they don't push this forward, then they would have failed in their charge and mission to advance the interest of Illinois students. I think this is a too strong statement, which I don't think that just failing them, basically, if they don't push that resolution, then they have to be blamed that they have failed in their complete charge and mission. So I think maybe it should be rewarded somehow to a softer tone than really saying it this way.
We actually anticipated a reaction about the be it finally resolved language. I can tell you anecdotally that the language that you're seeing here is actually, how do we want to say it, stepped down considerably from what the earlier versions were. We've been in dialogue with the IBHE and connected parties for quite some time about this. This is not a surprise to them. We feel that the strength of the language in this final paragraph is fair and nuanced and not too strong. So I would respectfully disagree with your characterization.
Alicia Finch from the Department of Philosophy. And I just want to say I definitely support this. I would probably say let's leave out the amendment just because it seems very strong as it is. But no matter, and because I think we should get this done, because this is one of those rare opportunities where we have an opportunity to advance our own self-interest and promote the equitable, fair, and just. And I tend to think when you have an opportunity to do that, you should just grab it. I also was thinking that the final paragraph is not too strong because, I mean, so I looked up the mission. They say on their website that their mission is to create and sustain a world-class educational system in Illinois that allows students from all communities and backgrounds to reach their full potential and achieve their dreams. Okay, and then they submit a strategic plan called A Thriving Illinois, Higher Education Paths to Equity, Sustainability, and Growth. So I think it's pretty obvious when that's your stated mission and you're not supporting an equitable funding act. I think it's pretty mild, actually, to say that they failed in their mission. They failed in their charge. So I myself have no objections to that. I strongly affirm it.
I want to double down on that because I was reading the mission today too, and there were three pillars, and those three pillars from the Higher Education Board are equity, sustainability, and growth. And their equity, they define it this way, to thrive, and they're talking about this strategic plan calls on us to close equity gaps that disproportionately impact African American, Latinx, and other students of color, low-income students, working adults, and students from rural communities. They should be doing that regardless, whatever, but they should also do it. We should be pushing this forward because those are our students. We are a Hispanic serving institution. 22 or maybe even a little bit more of our students are African Americans. 56% of our students are first gen, with similar number of Pell Grants coming in there. Our resolution really not only asks IBH to live up to its own plan, but also it helps our students. So, I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me. Their other things are sustainability. They say to thrive, this plan calls on reliable, equitable, and sufficient state investments through a new higher education funding system. Well, guess what this is? This is a new higher education funding system. And it seems pretty obvious they should be supporting it if what they want to do is are the stated goals of their strategic plan. I also want to say that their final goal is to thrive. This plan calls for an increase in diverse talent pipelines prepared for the future of work, engagement of employers and industry leaders, and innovation toward inclusive economic growth and development. What they also argue early in their strategic plan is that education actually spurs economic growth, and it does, but unless we fund education, it can't spur anything. So I just think this is sorry to say it, it's a no-brainer. We really should do this, and IBHE should be held to their own strategic plan. Thanks.
Karen Wedby, Department of Communication. Thank you for putting all the work into this. State budget cuts, inflation gaps have left NIU underfunded. Every one of us in this room felt the impact. But we need to remember that the people who are dealing with the harms most directly are our students, and especially our most vulnerable students. It's a modest act, but I ask you, please vote in favor of this resolution. We need to go on the record. Thank you.
All right, really quickly, I have been made aware that it would actually speed things along more if we left it as it was and didn't remove that final whereas. So I take back what I said before. And I think, because I think this is pretty urgent, I think we should just go for it. And so I see no reason to let that hold us.
One thing that's a little worthy of comment, I think, it's not part of the language that you're seeing here. This, I think, part of the turbulence that many of us are feeling has to do with the logistics with which this came together. We're trying to get 8 universities all to kind of do the same thing at the same time so that we hit the goal of presenting this at the next IBHE meeting, which is just in a few weeks. I have no idea how it's going at the other schools. Speaking for myself and a little bit for Mark, this is kind of our first rodeo at attempting something like this, and it didn't go perfectly, but that's kind of the urgency, and I think hope that explains a little bit why there's been some hiccups in this.
If you'd like any final word.
If I may speak just for a moment. First of all, for our colleague. I want to stress what Jason just said, that this is a collaboration between universities across the state. All right. This is us working in concert with universities that, like us, have been underfunded, chronically underfunded for many years. All right. The other aspect of this that I want to emphasize, and this is why, as a point of order, I would like us to include the whereas with that we read out as a point of order. The resolution as read, including the whereas, is the official so moved. All right. And I feel strongly about including that whereas, because that was a piece of collaboration within our institution, all right, where we talked to our IBHE representative, right, our faculty representative, the IBHE, and asked for her input. And that extra whereas was the result of her input. And I would very much ask that we include that and therefore include that in the first vote. It's always possible, as we're discussing this, for somebody to make an amendment to remove that language. And I understand if sight unseen, it feels scary, but I'm happy to circulate the couple of sheets of paper with the whereas throughout the room, if that's a concern. But other than that, that's what I wanted to say. It's about a collaboration with our other partner universities across the state. And there is chronic underfunding, not only for us, but them. And some are even in more dire situations than we are.
Chris Savio, nursing. So we are severely underfunded for years. That's one. Number two, we're not asking for the first part. We're not asking for any more than what has been decided as our budget, the next 2%. Underfunded, and now you take the other 2%. It is very palpable with the students that I'm dealing with, what they are going through on a daily basis. And what is that? They have to work, they are distressed. Less time to come over here because there's less resources being afforded to them when they come to this one. We're not asking for any more than what was supposed to be given to us. That's the first part. Then the inequities that we have to deal with, that's the next step that we are asking for. So for all those with this one that is presented to us, I don't see any conflict on what is needed for the students and for the universities that we are collaborating with. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you for the discussion on this. What I would add to it before I call this to a vote is, one, this is well within the purview of the things that I think we should be taking up and taking a vote on. This type of resolution, I think, is well within the purview of our Faculty Senate's body as it represents the Faculty Senate on our campus. I appreciate the work that you have both have taken and in collaboration with others to bring this forward. I think it's important to think about the whereases as statements, not as actions. And so, yes, it was added kind of later than the packet was distributed. However, it is a fact-based whereas about things that are happening in the state. The resolutions, the resolves, all remain the same, and those folks had access to before. So I would agree with moving forward as the package, as was read into the record. And I would just echo a lot of the comments from people who said it better than me, that I would support this action as we consider it going forward. So I would just throw my support for what that is worth to this body. And with that, I'm not seeing anybody else standing up and moving forward. So I will go to call this to vote. And for this, we will use our clickers one more time to make sure that we capture and allow folks to vote the way that they believe is right.
Thank you. So again, like with last time, the polls open. Clicking one or A is yes, that you agree with the motion. Two is no, that you don't agree. And three is to abstain, meaning you're telling us that you're present, but you're choosing not to vote. So if you click three, there will be zero impact on the outcome of the vote.
And just so folks know, this, in order to pass, it is a 50% plus one. So we just need more yeses than nos, or more nos than yeses, for that to carry out. We'll just give about 10 more seconds. If you have not voted, please get it in now. All right, and we can go ahead and close the poll. All right, so it overwhelmingly passes. And so, reflecting what I just said, thank you to those who have put their time and thought into this effort and being a leader in the state. NIU, we will be the first ones who have formally taken this vote. I am meeting with other Faculty Senate presidents on Friday and to learn about where they are in that process. And I agree with what Beth was just doing, is we can applaud the passage if we would like. So thank you.
I don't want to get in the habit of talking too much at the microphone, but thank you.
All right, that leads us into our reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. First up is our Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE report. So I will call up Dr. Puckett, who has a provision named after her now. So that's kind of fun to put on your CV to give that report.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. FAC has not met since our last meeting, and so we will be meeting via Zoom this Friday. We will be talking about various things, including the funding bill and what movement is had within the legislation, as well as talking about some different policies from surrounding states that impact higher ed and how, you know, it can potentially impact the state of Illinois, or just watching those things to see what's going on in Illinois. But I will report back to you at our next meeting what occurs at this meeting on Friday. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next up is the UAC to the BOT. Briefly, tomorrow is the working committees the board trustees will meet to take up several items, including sabbatical approvals, student fees and tuition increases, and there will be presentations from faculty on quantum information science at NIU and another on research into extreme weather that was undertaken during a sabbatical. Again, that is tomorrow in the Board of Trustees room, or you can click in virtually to view. Next up is a graduate council report. Unfortunately, the members of the graduate council or the grad school is having an event right now that requires all of the leadership at grad council to be there. So I will do my best to provide this brief report and answer any questions if anybody has any. You'll see in the packet, pages 17 to 24, you'll see an overview and then the policy change that is came out of graduate council that was passed on February 2nd by that body. This is a policy that sits underneath their purview. In academic year 24-25, there was a working group formed to review the graduate faculty membership here at NIU, the policies and procedures document. That working group brought forward several recommendations that were taken up by the graduate council and ultimately led into the proposal and the past change to the policies, which you'll see in the packet. Overall, the procedures were removed from the policy part of this document. There were changes to the graduate faculty categories, just some of the nuts and bolts of them. And then it provided authority to academic unit chairs and or directors to grant permission to teach graduate level courses. It used to be only the graduate dean could provide that. And there was an agreement from the dean as well as the members of the grad council that those closer to the programs should have that authority to make that decision. These changes were approved by the graduate council on February 2nd. So why are they coming here? Well, any changes that are substantive changes to the policies within the grad council are to be reported to the Faculty Senate for our information and our review. So that is why this report is coming forward, so that this body has an opportunity to review them and voice any concerns about them. And I will say, are there any questions or comments? Great. So then the next two, the Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, there's no report this month. There's no report from the Social Justice Committee. And then I will invite up Lisa Liberty to provide a report from the Faculty Senate University Council Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee report. So I will turn it over to Lisa as she comes up.
Hi. It's that time of year to begin the election process for Faculty Senate President to serve during the 2026-2027 academic year. The list of those eligible to be nominated is on page 25 of your packet and is also shown on the screen. Nominations for the Office of Faculty Senate will be taken from the Faculty Senate floor during the March 25th meeting. Voting members of Faculty Senate are asked to review the list being provided at this time and use the coming weeks to prepare for making nominations at the March 25th meeting. Letters of acceptance of nominations will be due in the office to Faculty Senate by Friday, April 10th. Those letters of acceptance of nomination will be provided to Faculty Senate via email by Wednesday, April 15th, and will also be included in the April 22nd Faculty Senate agenda packets. Election of the 2026-2027 Faculty Senate President will be held during the April 22nd faculty meeting. Any questions, comments?
William Mills, Engineering Technology. Has there been any consideration of moving to a tiered approach in a lot of the professional organizations I'm in to help people be effective? I know Ben and I have talked about it as well, but going to like a president-elect, maybe president, past president, however, but I think it would help everybody and result in a better process if we started considering it. So has there been any consideration of that? And I don't know if that would require an amendment to the bylaws or something, but I can tell you it's certainly something in the professional organization I've worked on that has been effective.
Thank you. Ben, do you want to?
Yeah, it's something Bill mentioned we've talked about. I've talked with others about. It's something that I would like to entertain, moving it from a single-year term to either a two-year term or this kind of rolling thing where you roll off but still have some expectation to share the institutional knowledge. And I would welcome any support or efforts in thinking through what that could look like. It would take a bylaw revision because in our bylaws, it's a single-year term. So if anybody would like to assist in drafting that, please feel empowered to draft it on your own and bring it forward, or to reach out, and I'm happy to help collaborate on designing something that's better than a single year with no onboarding or ramp off, because I do think there is a better process that could be in place. So thank you for that, Bill. But
yeah, thank you. Okay, next we are going to select three tenured faculty members and three instructors to serve on the 2025-2026 student grievance panel. I'm sorry, 2026-2027 student grievance panel. Members selected to serve on the panel might be called upon to review a student grievance should one be filed during the 2026-2027 academic year. These panel members will be selected by a lot from among the tenured faculty members of Faculty Senate and University Council, and then from among the instructors on the Faculty Senate and University Council. So I have two envelopes here, so we'll start with tenure track faculty. Does anybody want to come up and draw from the envelope? Okay.
So the first up is Emily McKee. Next is Nan Quinn. And the third is Todd Reeves. It is not a requirement. You're not out of it. Good try, but it's all the faculty. So then I will draw the three instructors' names. We have Justin Caffey. We have Roxana Fadabet. And I apologize if I get names wrong. And then we have Scott Stelka.
Congratulations.
All right. So that then brings us up to SGA report. Nathan, do we have a report? Yeah. So I invite up Nathan Gonzalez, Speaker of the SGA Senate.
Good afternoon. I'm very excited about the Faculty Senate's passing of the proposed resolution supporting the Equitable Funding Formula Act. And because of that, I have someone who has been following Illinois Senate Bill 0013, which is indeed the Adequate and Equitable Higher Education Funding Act, since when I was Deputy Speaker of the Senate last year. That is very important to me. Therefore, as a symbolic symbol, an act of solidarity with Faculty Senate, I will propose a similar resolution to present to the SJ Senate for their approval for our next meeting for next week, since the agenda for our Senate meeting is already out. Something I would also like to report is SGA Senate will be reviewing and potentially approving a resolution making recommendations to the graduate school on regards to graduate students taking undergraduate courses, among other items, as a result of a concern brought forward to SGA's attention. As I stated to this body in the very first Faculty Senate meeting, academics is a priority and an objective of our current administration, as it always has been, which is why it is leading towards these recommendations. It is not an act of punitive measure, but an act of ensuring and improving our academic standards for our students so we can encourage more students to attend Northern Illinois University. Thank you.
And thank you, Nathan. That brings two things to mind. One is You can keep walking. It's all right. But one is the importance that in future efforts that we should be more direct and intentional and proactive in reaching out to our SGA partners to see if they want to do something like this resolution. And so I think that's a learning and an opportunity for us to grow as a shared governance body. And second, I did not say it after the resolution was passed, but I just wanted to remind folks that we are public employees. And so we want to make sure as we think about our advocacy as one of the parts of the resolution, one of the resolves was to advocate and to call for advocacy is to remind folks of that ethics training that we do take. These are the types of things that that plays out in that we want to be thoughtful about how we go about doing it and doing it in the appropriate and aligned ways. And so there are, I will share out in the email that goes out with a summary, a link to our ethics compliance related political activity to ensure folks are in compliance with that. So, but again, thank you. The more important and salient thing is thank you for helping me remember to be better. So thank you, Nathan, for that, for the report and for the work that you've said that SGA will take up. That brings up, do we have an operating staff council report? So I will invite up Ms. Boston.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just a really brief report. We met on February 5th. We invited Vice President Dr. Sumner to come and talk about the equity-focused work that we the university is doing from ADEI. She announced the launching of the Husky First Center and a Summer Bridge pilot program with the CHANCE program to strengthen and support our efforts with first-gen and Pell-eligible students and addressing the equity gaps. And we further discussed and emphasized the importance of doing and completing the climate survey so that the university can assess the feedback that is submitted. And lastly, council members raised some equity concerns regarding the service award. It was mentioned that some staff that are either retiring or on leave would not be eligible for their award because they would not technically be an active employee. So those concerns will be brought up with HR through Kathy Dorderline. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, and then we have a Supported Professional Staff Council report from Felicia Bohannon.
So we extended our deadline for the SPSS Dependent Scholarship, and basically that is available for either a child or a grandchild of an SPSS member, and that deadline was extended to February 27th. We're preparing for elections in the next 2 months. And then looking at also, we have a number of SPSS awards. We're waiting for the time frame for the presidential awards to end before we announced ours. Thank you.
Thank you, Felicia. All right, that brings us to our informational items. A through N are the standards ones. You'll see on O, we have two more Faculty Senate meetings for the rest of the year that are listed there. And that brings us to item 13, which is adjournment. Can I have a motion to adjourn today's meeting? Thank you, Scott. A second. Thank you, Emily. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.